Hello and welcome to Friday edition of KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch, and here with me is my co-host, Taylor Phelps. This week, we've got quite a lot to talk about. We've got the NBA playoffs. Injuries are hurting a lot of teams. Then we're going to talk the Rangers and finish off with the NFL draft results. Sadly, Ryan Bilbs couldn't be with us this Friday because he's at a funeral right now for his grandmother that passed away just recently. But he will be back with us on Tuesday, so our thoughts and prayers are with the Bilbs family right now. All right, Taylor, let's get started. First, we've got NBA playoffs. What all is going on? We've got a lot of injuries really impacting the playoffs.
I feel like the injuries are more significant than the games themselves. Just reported that Russell Westbrook with a torn meniscus is out for the remainder of the playoffs. That is a huge hit to Oklahoma City, which, to be honest, that drops them to where they're going to struggle to reach the Western Conference Finals. Let's forget finals at all, unless Kevin Durant just went insane and gets huge support from the people coming off the bench and their backup point guard. We'll just have to see. But now I think you have the Clippers are the favorite to win that side of the bracket.
Okay.
If they can, you know, topple Memphis, who just recently won their game at home. So that could be a close series. So right now the West is a toss-up.
Yeah, I do agree with you a lot. Although I was reading on ESPN Insider right after the news came out that Kevin Durant actually, miraculously, his shooting improved and his scoring improved by almost 6 points when Russell Westbrook wasn't on the floor.
That is very true.
So we'll see what.
But does Kevin Durant Westbrook does Kevin Durant's gains without him? I don't think it equals
the overall
Russell Westbrook actually playing in the game.
Yeah.
So that's part of the case too. But like we were talking about just before we started the show, the injuries this year in the NBA have been ridiculous. With like you said, Steve Blake and Steve Nash are now not going to play this next game against the Spurs.
Tonight.
Dwayne Wade has had reports of bone bruises on his knee, so he may not play this next game. Mm-hmm. And those aren't as severe as, let's say, Russell Westbrook or what happened to David Lee with his hip flexor.
Yeah.
But still, these are just an injury plague league. And like you said, Derrick Rose also with him not being
and
able
Kobe.
To play. Kobe, Rajon Rondo's not playing in this playoffs.
And then also reported is Steph Curry may not be playing tonight against the Nuggets either.
Because of his ankle this last game. That's true,
so the Nuggets should be the very heavy favorites tonight.
And they lost Gallinari this year, too.
True.
It seems like every team has been injury-plagued with the exception of, I think, the Brooklyn Nets, who their core main guys, Brooke Lopez, Darren Williams, and Joe Johnson, have all been healthy.
And the Spurs, luckily, got healthy during the playoffs. Like, they just now have all
definitely.
The players
They're
back.
Their ability to stay healthy when the playoffs started this year, that's been their Achilles heel the last few years.
Yeah.
No pun intended with Kobe, but that has been their Achilles heel.
Right.
And they've been able to avoid that this year with Popovich, I think, sitting some guys down throughout the regular season and being able to maintain their health.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to stay on that too far because we talked a lot about the NBA playoffs in the last show. So we'll make sure to talk more about the playoffs again on Tuesday when we should have a lot of series about to end and going into the
we'll know a lot
the
more
next
on
part.
Tuesday.
Yeah, the quarterfinals. So let's next talk about the Rangers. As of today, Friday, April 26th, the Rangers are in a first-place tie with Boston, and they are 2.5 games ahead of Oakland for the division. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on with the Rangers. They've got hot bats. They've got great pitching. Just everything's going right for the Rangers, it seems. Let's talk a little bit about the hot bats first. The Rangers are 7th in runs scored now, 8th in batting average, and 7th in slugging percentage in the entire league, which is much better than the 15th and 16th area they were earlier this week. Cruz, Berkman, and Kinsler are all hitting above 300, and Przinski is at 296. And all of those players have multiple home runs as well. Cruz now tied with Kinsler for 5 for the lead with the Rangers. So what do you think's changed just in batting for the Rangers?
Well, the batting has correlated to wins. We've seen that because the pitching is still maintained a high level. In the top 8 categories of pitching and batting on ESPN, they're ranked in the top 12 in every one.
Yeah.
So that's very impressive for a team that basically doesn't have a weakness.
Yeah.
But the bats have been the reason we've seen the production of wins. To be 2 games up on Oakland and 7 games up on the Angels, that's ridiculous. And to be this early in the season.
In April.
We're jumping into things. But still, we've already played 22 games.
Yeah.
So that's very good pace. Where if we kept that up, we could win the division easily, but you don't want to jinx them either.
Yeah, and I don't think this division will be easy in the end.
I don't think so either.
Because the Angels are really hurting in pitching. A lot of their starting pitchers are out, and they're going to get a lot of them back. And their bats really haven't heated up yet, which we expect Josh Hamilton to.
We definitely expect that to change.
Yeah, and of course, Pujols is hurt, so when he comes back.
If they never got up to the level where their bats were producing high numbers at a clip that was at the top of Major League Baseball, I think it would be a shock for this year.
Yeah. All right, well, let's also talk about the pitching. The Rangers are second in team ERA in the league, tied for third in saves, tied for second in shutouts, and sixth in strikeouts and batting average. That's batting average allowed against the Rangers. Yu Darvish leads the league in strikeouts with 49. He's tied for second in wins with 4. The most wins of the season is 5. And he's ninth in ERA with a 1.65 ERA. And we've got several Rangers pitchers right there behind him in the ERA. I don't think any starting pitcher is above 3 point something. We don't have anybody in the 4s, which is great compared to last year. And then Joe Nathan is tied for third in saves in the league with 7. And then Derek Holland is 14th in the league in WHIP, which stands for walks and hits per inning pitched, with a 0.98 WHIP, which is pretty insane. That means he's only allowing less than one hit and walk per inning pitched, which is just insane, I think.
Definitely. I mean, this is just it's great. I think we were expected to have good pitching, but not great pitching. Mm-hmm. And now that we've seen that through these first 22 games, it's kind of like, well, maybe we do have a chance, because before we were freaking out about losing all the bats we were going to lose, and Josh Hamilton, and just to be able to come out like we did with the pitching, and now to our bats are catching up with that. Mm-hmm. They're just on a hot streak that who knows when we'll slow down.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, what do you think is the biggest surprise for the Rangers as a team this year? What do you think came out of left field, as the saying goes?
Ian Kinsler's been playing great. I mean, I think he's really stepped up to be the leader of the team from, you know, his position standpoint. And then the pitching, just Yu Darvish is carrying everybody. He's
right.
Just such a dynamic player and such a good player as he leads the league in strikeouts. Is that correct?
Yes, 49.
Lead the league in strikeouts. And just looks like everyone's following suit with him. Like, he's setting the pace, and everyone else is just right there behind him.
Well, are those really surprises, though? Like, we kind of expected
Darvish. I don't think
Darvish
you
to...
is as much as I think the problem was Kinsler has always been kind of the backseat guy.
Okay.
When you had Josh Hamilton, as Josh Hamilton was just the
and
face.
Michael Young.
I mean, Michael Young had been there for how many years?
Oh, forever.
It seems like forever. Through the bad years and through the good years, he was there.
Yeah.
And he was just more of a face. And I think Ian Kinsler has kind of brought that up, not really brought it upon himself, but brought it upon himself with his play.
Right.
So I think that's more of a surprise. But as far as player production, I don't know. What do you think as far as who's been your biggest actual surprise as far as production?
Right. I honestly think Berkman has been my biggest happy surprise, at least. Now, I think Adrian Beltre has been my biggest surprise in his not producing. He's still doing well.
I wasn't even thinking that way, producing.
He's still doing well, hitting not hitting-wise, he's hitting around 240, but defensively, he's still amazing at third base, and he still has a few home runs, which is always great to see. And I'm sure he'll pick up the batting average pretty soon. But I think, good-wise, I think Berkman is my biggest surprise by far, because he didn't do all that great for the Cardinals last year, or for the Yankees the year before that, although he was annoying to us every time that he played us. But it's just great to see Berkman have a above 300 hitting average and multiple home runs, great on base percentage, all this stuff that I didn't expect from a very, very old Lance Berkman. And AJ Pruszynski's also been a good surprise, not as much as a surprise for him because he hit 20 something home runs last year. But I think we weren't really expecting the new additions to be as good as they were.
And our home runs are fairly well spread out with Nelson Cruz with 5 and Ian Kinsler with 5. We don't have just one guy we're relying on either. Mm-hmm. We're more of a team. We don't have a batter, okay, here he comes. Here comes Josh. We need this from him. You look down the lineup and the top 6 guys you can all count on.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of their success so far.
Now, do you think the Rangers need to pick someone up for first base? Do you think Mitch Moreland is doing well enough? And same goes for, like, the batting average of Elvis Andrews. He's struggling a little bit. And then, of course, our nine-hitter, alternating between Leonis Martin and Craig Gentry, and Jeff Baker. What do you think about those guys?
But, you know, we see this all the time in sports where people just have slumps.
Okay.
So you never know when guys are hot at the beginning, and maybe Elvis and Mitch will pick it up towards later on in the year.
Right.
So it's not necessarily as big a concern to me as more of something in the clubhouse that's going on between players. Mm-hmm. I think this is just early in the year. Takes guys to get going. We've seen A-Rod go through slumps. We've seen Derek Jeter go through slumps. We've seen the best players in baseball. Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton are having slumps right now. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I think, anything to be concerned about as long as the team is winning and things are good between players in the clubhouse.
Right. And traditionally, the 7, 8, and 9 spots are usually not the best hitters on the team.
Not at all. No. And we're getting production in other areas from them. It's not just like they're the problem of the team.
Definitely. Elvis Andrews is still always a great, great hitter and, a great
Cooper,
fielder.
Who can complain when you're first in your division?
That's true.
That's the thing. What are people going to say? Mm-hmm. You're going to say you need to improve first base? Well, he just look at the record. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in first. Why are you going to mess with that?
Yeah, that's always when you say scoreboard.
Yes, scoreboard.
All right. Well, how about the biggest surprise for the MLB as a whole? What do you think is the biggest surprise for them?
Oh, gosh. Of all the surprises, what's the biggest? That's the trick question. You know, we get to keep it in the division. And like you said earlier, lack of success of the Angels, I think, is a huge surprise with all the money they've pumped into that franchise and spent on their players to not be producing what the product that they expected to is really a disappointment. Because I would, as a Rangers fan, I would also like to see the Angels be competing at least.
Yeah, just not
to make it
with
interesting.
Us.
Not to beat us, but to make things interesting.
That they'd like be 1.5 games behind and we always sweep them in the series every time.
Yes, that would be something fun to watch. But to see them be sorry and beat them, I mean, that's like if Houston was terrible and the Mavericks were beating up on them. Yeah, it's a good series, but I want to see at least them compete a little bit.
That's true. Okay, well, what do you think is the biggest disappointment for the MLB? Is it the same, or do you think the Toronto Blue Jays with the money they spent in the offseason or anything else?
I'd keep it the same. I just keep it close to where we are and with the Angels.
Right.
It's just that's just a disappointment to not be able to produce, like we said, the product that they've spent money on. But you mentioned the Blue Jays too. They could be considered. Mm-hmm. But to have top players like Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton that everyone knows across Major League Baseball fans, it's really a disappointment.
I think I'm going to have to go something that we haven't mentioned yet. Detroit is currently third in their division behind, of all teams, the Kansas City Royals and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, if you could tell me that anyone saw that coming,
you'd be impressed.
Yeah, especially the Royals being in first place in their division. That is astounding. Now, they're only like 2 games behind the Royals, so it's not too bad yet. But the fact that the Detroit Tigers are not leading their division when they have Justin Verlander and all the great pitching that they have in general, and then they've got the reigning Triple Crown winner on their team, Cabrera, and Prince Fielder. I mean, that's a great hitting lineup right there. And they've got, as I said, great pitching. They should not be in third place.
Not at all. But baseball is a tricky sport because you got to have good people everywhere because they're forced to come up to step up to the bat.
Right.
I can't give the ball to Kobe every time, and I can't put the ball in Peyton Manning's hands.
Right.
I have to step up. If you're the ninth batter, you have to step up just like the first batter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where your differences come in. And good pitching, well, it doesn't matter if you're not scoring either. So everybody's got to work together in baseball, but it's different because you have to work together with what you do individually.
Right.
And not as much a flow.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us in this first segment. We're going to go to a very quick commercial break, and then we'll be back to talk, of course, the Cowboys draft, not the Rangers draft.
Yeah, we need to talk Cowboys.
We definitely need to get on that. A lot of Cowboys draft stuff. So stick around. We'll be back in just a few moments.
You took her to college. She took you back and forth to work each day, and she took the whole family on vacation last year. Ah, she was a good car, a reliable car, but now it's time to say goodbye. A great way to honor her memory is by donating that car to KETR. You not only get a tax receipt, but you can feel good knowing that your station will use the funds to provide quality programming for Northeast Texas. Call 855-KETR-123 to schedule an appointment or visit KETR.org.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we have Eric Gills at the Levitt Shell in Memphis, Tennessee. Then we'll hop on the legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise and hear from Johnny Taylor's little girl, Tasha Taylor. That, plus our feature host, Barbara Ching, continues her look at country music and the blues. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tuesday nights at 11, following Latin Soul on KETR.
Welcome back to KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch here with you again, and of course, Taylor Phelps, my co-host. As I said earlier, Ryan Bilps couldn't be with us on this Friday because he is with his family for a funeral, but he will be back with us on Tuesday. All right, Taylor, so the big thing to talk about now is the Cowboys draft. We had, as a lot of our fans know, we were doing a live tweet last night where we discussed everything that's happening in the NFL draft. Got a lot of response from a lot of our followers and from DeMarcus Ware.
DeMarcus Ware back also
that was awesome.
Let us know about his draft day experience, yeah. And said that his biggest memory was, you know, looking at his mom and crying and being like, I'm playing for America's team, which you got to think that is just one of the most emotional things that could happen to someone. And
yeah.
To get that response from DeMarcus Ware really knows that he loves where he is.
Yeah.
And it really helped us as Cowboys fans be like, well, at least we know that some people still take pride in being a Dallas Cowboy.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's talk about that also.
Okay.
Do you think that these players want to go to the Cowboys? Do you think that any of them, when they find out, oh, I'm going to play for the Cowboys, they're excited?
Right.
Of course, you're excited to be drafted. But, you know, there's different levels of, you want to go to San Francisco, you want to go to historic places like Green Bay, or do you want to go to Jacksonville? I mean,
now, I think you're obviously going to be more excited to go to the Cowboys than Jacksonville or Buffalo or Oakland or one of those teams that's really struggled, Arizona, one of those teams. But I think the Cowboys are less excitement than they used to be. Like, if you'd been drafted by the Cowboys in the mid-90s, you'd be like,
yeah!
You know, I'm going to compete for a Super Bowl. I'm playing for America's team. And now it's like,
but I think even in the early 2000s when we weren't, there was still that luster surrounding the Cowboys about them winning Super Bowls and being, just the aura that surrounded the franchise was different, I believe, than it is now.
Yeah, because we're almost 2 decades separated from the Super Bowls.
It's almost like Jerry Jones has started to turn us into a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad because we don't deserve that with the talent we have, the facilities we have,
the
fans we have, and the lineage. But he started to just surround us with that idea of, ha-ha, the Cowboys, you're going to go play for the Cowboys, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And that's kind of sad for these players that are coming up, especially with our draft pick right now, Travis Frederick from Wisconsin.
Yeah, center from Wisconsin. I do want to mention, though, that I still think most players will be very excited about the Cowboys because they know that it's going to be a big money day.
Oh, without a doubt.
Because the Cowboys are still by far the biggest paying organization in any sports, except for Manchester United for soccer.
Definitely.
But otherwise, the Cowboys are the thing.
They're the franchise. Yeah. And they're right up there, like you said, Manchester United, Yankees, Cowboys. Those are the big ones. If you want to play for somebody, those are your targets.
Celtics, Lakers, and basketball. I've got the scouting report on Travis Frederick that, not obviously the Cowboys scouting report, but one similar to that.
Yes.
This is from Kickoff Coverage, which is a CBS affiliate on a blog that I've follow. Okay, so it says his strengths, he's a top-notch football IQ and overall intelligence to recognize what the defense is doing and adjust the offensive line accordingly. He's bulked up and added bulk to his frame, carries his weight felt for a 335-plus pounder. So big, big guy. He's mobile enough to get to the second level and block well in space. He's got a thick upper body with a base strength to anchor off the snap and hold his ground. He works hard with his technique and doesn't make any mistakes, fights with a finishing attitude, and understands different scenarios, keeping his head on a swivel. Better foot quickness and agility for a blocker with his size. So most people that are his size and weight don't really move very fast. And we saw the tape when he got drafted. Very, very fast center. He comes from a program known for producing NFL-quality offensive linemen and has starting experience at both center and guard. So maybe that's why the Cowboys decided to go after him.
Let
he
me
has
tell
starting
you,
experience.
Those Wisconsin boys are big.
They eat a lot of cheese, my friend.
They are farm boys. Mm-hmm. As big as they come. If you're 6'4", 312 from Wisconsin, you're bigger than a 6'4", 300-pounder from somewhere else.
That's
just
true.
Because of how... just. They're just so big. They're just such forces. And to, you know, we really talked last night when we were watching about we want to tackle. We want to tackle because we do. We do need tackles.
We need any offensive linemen.
But like we talked, we need offensive linemen. And the center position has been a struggle for us, not only just from their production, but from the entire line and the communication between linemen. A center can do a lot because a center is basically in control of the whole line. So they're picking up blocks for other linemen. They're the ones who are controlling. How many snaps have we had over Tony Romo's head?
Yeah, that's very
true. That's just been like, oh, let me rip my hair out. I'm so sick of watching us shoot ourselves in the foot by snapping the ball over our quarterback's head and watching Tony chase it.
Right.
So maybe he was the best at that spot. Maybe he was the best at 31. And it, you know what's the biggest surprise to me is that Manti Te'o, Geno Smith,
Tyrone Matthew
and Eddie Lacy are all still on the board. It's the first time, I believe, since 1968
that a
running back has not been taken in the first round.
Yeah.
And Eddie Lacy is a monster.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, let me read you a few weaknesses about Frederick just before we move on. He does lack elite athleticism and has some stiffness in his hips. He needs to keep his weight in check to stay mobile, which, I mean, it's hard to keep your weight in check when you're already 300 plus. He is susceptible to explosive interior linemen off the snap and needs to set up quicker to gain position and block off balance. Now, what that means is when people like Ndamukong Suh come in and they explode right in and they're not like there's not a big push off.
Yeah.
He has trouble adjusting to that and catching them when they just burst instead of pushing off.
He can get knocked off a little bit.
Yeah, so he has a little bit of trouble with that. But other than that, I think
Frederick
is a good
pick. We hadn't heard much about Travis Frederick because we were mainly targeting that 18 pick and possibly trying to get someone like Chance Warmack or DJ Fluker, who went 10 and 11.
Yeah.
And in fact, just an interesting fact, three Alabama players went in a
9, 10, 11.
With Dee Milliner, Chance Warmack, and DJ Fluker going 9, 10, and 11, like you said.
Right.
Which is, you got to think, that's why they won the national championship. Yeah. They got three NFL players that are top 11 picks.
And that's why Nick Saban doesn't want to go to the NFL, because he has three.
He has NFL
picks.
Players playing college football, so he's going to compete way better there.
See, if he goes to the NFL, he only gets one first-round pick every once in a while.
When
he gets however many he wants.
About 20 or 50.
Yeah. Now, mentioning Alabama, the SEC as a whole tied the most people taken in the first round with 12. That's a tie with the ACC back in 2006 when the ACC meant something. They don't really anymore. But I think that was mostly...
besides Florida State, with EJ Manuel being the first quarterback taken. I mean, there's
the
a million different storylines that we could talk about. And for EJ Manuel to be taken by the Buffalo Bills when everybody thought Nassib out of Syracuse might be the first one,
or
especially
guy.
Geno Smith, to not have Geno Smith, a dynamic quarterback who at one time, before Johnny Manziel got hot, was maybe, this my guy might
be
the Heisman Trophy winner,
to not be
taken is just crazy. And you saw the look on, you could just see the look on Geno Smith.
The heartbrokenness,
just the heartbrokenness of how could I go from being, and I'm sure he was happy for Tavon Austin, but how can I go from being the guy to being, oh, I'm going to have to come back day two, and who knows what's going to happen, which I'm sure he'll be taken later on today.
Yeah.
But it's just sad. It's just sad to watch that kid. But maybe this will give him the motivation going into the offseason.
Big chip on his shoulder.
I'm going to prove things to people. Yeah. I just hope that he goes to a team where he can if not this year, start in a few years.
Yeah.
If we see him go to someone like San Francisco, he doesn't have a shot. So
that's true. Well, let's talk just what we think the next round is going to be like. Who do you think will pick up, let's say, Matt Barkley or Geno Smith or Manti Te'o? Where do you think they're going to go?
Gosh, I don't know. I think I could see Manti going very quickly, maybe he might be the next pick. He might be the next pick to the Jaguars. He might be that pick to Philadelphia. But speaking of Matt Barkley and Geno Smith, I could really see Geno going to Detroit at 36 possibly, or Jacksonville needs a quarterback. I could see Matt Barkley or Geno going there.
Okay.
I think those three players, Geno, Matt Barkley, and Manti, are going to go relatively early in the second round. I don't think teams will pass on them. You get a night to refresh and think back and think, oh, what are we doing? It's an easy choice. It's a no-brainer. We have these players left. Let's take a chance on them. And even though it's second round, you don't really want to take a chance. It's hard not to with guys that are so talented who are thought of to be as some of the top 10 talents in the draft. Now, you spoke of Tyrann Mathieu. I think he'll fall even further.
Mm-hmm.
He might fall to I could see him falling to the fourth round, the fifth round. And you know what? You know, we had a debate over it last night as we were talking, and I was saying that I'd like to see the Cowboys take a chance on him, and you were saying, you can go ahead and tell your point of view.
Yeah, I personally don't trust Tyrann Mathieu. Now, I think he is a second or third round talent, but I don't think he's worth the money for that. I think if he falls fourth round, you get him in a heartbeat because you don't have to pay him as much money, and he is not as much of a risk. But if the Cowboys got him in the second round, I would be furious because you're going to have to pay him
pay him more money. Yeah. Who knows how he's going to turn out. But, yeah, like you said, fourth round, you got it. You got to take shot on him because you just saw what he did.
Yeah. Now, I've got Mel Kiper's newest second-round mock draft up. He thinks that Matt Barkley is going to go as the next pick of the draft, not to the Jaguars. He thinks someone will trade up. He doesn't say who. And then he thinks Geno Smith will go 35th to the Philadelphia Eagles. Manti Te'o will go 37th to the Bengals. And then Ryan Nassib from Syracuse will go to the New York Jets. That'll be interesting if a Syracuse guy ends up with the Jets. And then the guy that you really mentioned, Eddie Lacy, he would go 46th to the Buffalo Bills and be a backup for C.J. Spiller. Now, I personally think that's a waste of Eddie Lacy's talents. I think he'd end up more like 53 for the Bengals, but they're saying
just because we believe he's a starting talent and deserves to go somewhere and be the man.
Yeah.
But you can also learn a lot from sitting behind someone for a year.
That's true.
But like you said, if Geno Smith gets picked up by Philadelphia at that 35th pick, then Philadelphia has instantly become, I believe, the best draft so far.
Okay.
Now we will see what happens in the later rounds. But when you talk about them picking up, being able to pick up Lane Johnson, and then come back and also pick up Geno Smith, who they wanted, who we thought they might have taken at four, that's incredible. That's something that you can only dream of. And I'm sure they're sitting there crossing their fingers thinking, please, Jacksonville, please pass on this guy so we can pick him up at 35.
That's true. All right, well, we've only got about a minute and a half left, so let's real quick, biggest surprise of the draft, what do you think?
Well, we haven't even talked about this, and I can't believe we haven't, but Eric Fisher being number one from a mid-major school of Central Michigan. I mean, he's a big guy at 6'7", 300 pounds, but that's still such a risk to me. He played good in the Senior Bowl, but have we really seen him against the top talent that Luke Jokel's gone against in the SEC and been able to boost week after week against those Alabama defensive ends? It's just tough for me to believe that the Chiefs went with Eric Fisher, but they must have seen something we didn't.
That's true. I think for me the biggest surprise is that E.J. Manuel went when he did and that he was the only quarterback taken.
That is definitely one of the
big I thought that
ones.
Was insane. What do you think is the biggest disappointment?
I don't think it's really their fault. I can't really blame them, but I'd say the Cowboys moving down to 31 and picking up only one more pick later in the
Now it was a good pick. Round. It was a 72nd pick.
A good pick, but that 18 pick I think we really wanted. We talked about it so much that we really wanted that high pick to where we could jump up and grab just an offensive lineman that we can have for 10 to 15 years and just produce year in and year out. So it's kind of sad to see us move down and kind of settle again like we have so many times before.
Right. Well, just to end the show, we wanted to mention that Aaron Rodgers has signed a 5-year extension for $110 million and is expected to get $40 million in the first year alone. Now that's with bonuses and all that. But that's insane, I think. That makes Aaron Rodgers,
Green Bay.
Yeah, that makes Aaron Rodgers the highest salaried player at an average of $22 million a year.
And that's not counting endorsements with the discount double check. So
with everything, all the endorsements he has. So it's kind of weird to think that Green Bay, of all teams, is the one paying the most to a quarterback. But we'll see what happens.
But he has won a Super Bowl, so.
Yeah, but I don't think he really will win another Super Bowl unless the Packers draft someone on the O-line as well, because they have almost a worse situation than Tony Romo.
Well, I got two more days.
That's true. We'll be sure to mention what goes on with the second and third rounds and all the other rounds of the draft. We're not going to do a live tweet session like we did, but we will mention what goes on and give you the updates on all the Cowboys draft picks. We hope to have a draft expert in later on next week. But that's going to do it for us today. I'm Cooper Welch.
And I'm Taylor Phelps.
This is KETR's Locker Room. We'll see you Tuesday.